This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, the times where legacy brands could just trade on their names alone appears to be a thing of the past. And there's a sort of the poster child of what can go wrong for consumer staples in the form of Kraft Heinz. And we've got a few examples in South Africa of brand custodians, you might call them, the likes of Tiger and AVI. And the question on investors' lips is, who could be next? What are the trends that are impacting heritage brands? And are we seeing enough innovation and R&D in this space, in the consumer packaged goods space, as it's known by its acronym CPG internationally? Well, in tonight's panel, we've got, let's start with the rose amongst the thorns tonight. We've got Kerith Buerta, who's the MD of Nielsen South Africa. Kerith, good to have you in studio.
Thank you very much for having me. Great to be here.
And the brand father, Jeremy Sampson, MD. Finance Africa on a Monday. This feels a little bit out of kilter. Jeremy, how are you doing?
It's going to be a long week, Michael. Thank you.
Oh, he says because he has to come back on Thursday. Kerith.
Yes.
Your annual Consumer Insights event was held recently, and we spoke at the time, but the key takeaway for me was really this ability of consumers to trade down during a downturn in economic cycle. Mm-hmm. And realize that sometimes the alternative choices, the white labels, the non-branded offerings, are just as good or certainly don't lack for quality and therefore often don't trade back up. How much of a problem is this for the heritage brands and how are they tackling this threat?
I think an interesting thing to note is, yes, private label's doing well. So it's got to 22.5% of market share. It is definitely growing. But we are still seeing growth in the heritage brands and the heritage category. So I don't think it's necessarily that all heritage brands are losing to private label. What we've been seeing is if the manufacturers communicate the benefits, the purpose of those branded products that have the deep heritage, they still can do particularly well. There is a lot of price sensitivity. There's no doubt. The consumer is very squeezed in terms of the wallet. We've seen that through all our work. But there is still room with the right messaging, the right purpose, the right offering for heritage brands to do okay.
It's interesting that, Jeremy, on the one hand, we've got a consumer that is squeezed and will perhaps trade down maybe on a choice of dishwashing liquid, something that they might not be Instagramming themselves with. But when it comes to products that speak to the social media age, this almost narcissistic age, you want to be still seen with those brands that have a certain status, have a certain heritage. So there is still an opportunity to play in the digital space if you've got the right strategy.
I think you've got to look at the segments. You know, the millennials are buying very differently to, I think I'm from the silent generation, and then you've got XYZ and a few others. But to me, one of the big things is the retailers. They are no brands in their own right. I remember coming back to South Africa in 1992, and the gentleman who today is the chairman of Pick n Pay said Pick n Pay was not a brand. And that was speaking in a conference of about 200 people in Sandton. And he said, we are not a brand. Now, you know, let's look at Pick n Pay, because Richard Brasher, you know, comes from England. He comes from Tesco. They have, as I recall, five layers of private label. Five layers, not one or two. And he understands this. But, you know, Pick n Pay as a brand has got stronger and stronger, so people will trust Pick n Pay, as they'll trust Spar, Checkers, whatever. And I think that's one of the big changes. The problem we have in South Africa, of course, is that a lot of the major manufacturers supply these supermarket providers and the major brands which they own, and that puts them in a difficult position. You know, if you're in Europe, you have all sorts of different suppliers and you can move around more. You don't have that flexibility locally.
It speaks to an interesting dynamic, but potential conflict as well.
Not potential, it's real.
It's a real conflict. Yeah. Kerith, how do brands approach this then? How do they approach this game where certain suppliers or manufacturers are making their white label products while also making their branded products, and you've got the retailer in the middle trying to squeeze the best deal out of them?
I think the key thing for the manufacturers to be clear where they want to play. And for some of them, they very much want to play exclusively in the branded, non-retailer branded products. Some of them do play in the branded retail space as well. It really varies by manufacturer. And I think in certain categories, they are able to command, as manufacturers, the right sales without going into private label. In other instances, there is a need for them to potentially play in that space. So it's not one size fits all. They're definitely different behaviors across the categories, and not all manufacturers playing in the white brands, what we call private label space.
Where are you seeing the major growth in the private label space?
We're seeing, I think private labels got about 70% of the business coming through perishables and groceries, so it's really strong there. Where we're seeing growth is absolutely everywhere. It's outpacing branded, with the exception of beverages, in every single segment we're looking at. But we talked about the tiering. Jeremy spoke about tiering, and what's quite interesting is when we split the branded and the private label into premium, value for money, and economy, in both instances, although value for money is growing, premium on both sides is still a quarter of the sales. So there's still a place for premium, whether it's a private label premium or a white goods premium or a branded historical heritage brand premium product.
And also about capturing the hearts and minds of consumers. Jeremy, I had the MD of Mondelez for the EMEA region on the show earlier, and he spoke about how, as a consumer packaged goods company, they've now got to capture the hearts and minds of an audience in an entirely different way than you could by creating one advert that became a smash hit. Now you've got to have a purpose, you've got to talk sustainability, and you've got to talk through a multiple of different channels. You've got to do radio, you've got to do TV, you've got to do social. It's a lot more difficult for brands to communicate a coherent vision.
Well, we could spend the next 2 hours just talking pricing, because that's, as you can see, it's a dark art almost. Another is sample size. You know, I remember Unilever saying how they cracked a market they've been chasing for decades in India by reducing the sample size of the product. And these are the things that marketers have to use, whether it's pricing, whether it's sizing, whether it's sampling. Nielsen does this all the time. And you can drill down to find out what's going on. And it's very, very complicated. Now, the top marketing directors of this country, as we know, are in charge of brands worth millions and millions and millions of rands. But they don't stay there all the time. You have to work all the time to make sure that you're going to be winning.
And that's what it boils down to at the end of the day. I was hoping to have Anthony Clark on the show tonight to give us the analyst's view on which company he believes is winning. We know AVI has been head and shoulders the leader of the pack for some time, and the latest results certainly show that it is still out in front, but perhaps not by the margin that it used to enjoy in this market. And I think, Kareth, it's no secret that some of the largest and oldest consumer packaged good brands have perhaps not innovated at the pace that they should have. And a lot of the smaller brands are showing them up in this regard.
It's an interesting comment. I have seen some commentary that innovation's not happening as prolifically as one would think. But, you know, I was talking to our innovation lead earlier today, and what she was saying is in the top innovator award category that we were involved in last week, there were more than 100 brands that were up for nominations, and those are branded products. So that's pretty impressive. There's a lot of innovation still taking place, not just a minor tweak on the product, a little bit of a range extension. There's still a lot of innovation taking place, and we are measuring that and trying to assess for these manufacturers which of the innovations are going to make it through the clutter and which ones have a little bit more of a risk.
Yeah, risky ones. I'm going to mention Rice Krispies. Why did they have to go into a weird vanilla that wasn't the normal Rice Krispies, the plain from my childhood? Maybe it's just me. Maybe my taste buds have changed. But they've certainly done some innovation there that hasn't quite worked. So it can be hit and miss. And that's the risk for brands if they don't, I suppose, do enough sampling in the marketplace before releasing an
update. It's really important to do the research first. I think what we have found, and it's an interesting fact, a lot of the innovations that happen are largely signed off or approved by a marketing director or managing director who quite likes the brand without doing the research across the entire spectrum of consumers. And it's absolutely critical. We were talking about the different types of generations that we've got, the different spectrum of consumers. You absolutely have to test the product and understand whether it's going to hit the target market. You can't just assume that you as the marketer understand your target market from your own lens, I suppose.
And you can imagine if you get it wrong, the implications, because it's not just the cost, it's the distribution, putting things out into the market, taking things back. But as we often say, brands have got to stay relevant. And what's the easiest way sometimes to keep a brand relevant? Through its packaging. And that's often the cheapest as well. So the actual product, the mix, as it were, the recipe, doesn't change. But the packaging, the closures, again, the sizing, the materials, those are the sorts of things that can give the impression that the brand is staying relevant. And as we know, younger enough that it appeals to the millennials.
Kurt, is enough focus being placed on the marketing side of things? Or are we in an era where marketing directors think we can just have a Facebook campaign and do some stealth marketing on social media and cut back on expenses? We don't have to pay for those expensive radio or TV campaigns.
It's an interesting question. I think I'm going to answer it in a different way. I'm going to say there's perhaps too much emphasis on price promoting as opposed to marketing. That's what we're seeing. So what we're seeing is 30% of sales coming through on promotion. So I think a lot of the push to drive sales is more about trying to get the right price and discount in the market for whatever reason. And 60% of those promotions are not breaking even. So that's not the approach that's driving the right growth. It really is about communicating to the consumer in the right way, not through price, talking to the purpose of the brand, whether it be local or social responsibility or whatever else that brand stands for.
Yeah, because if you're just doing promotions to gain market share or to keep standing still, Jeremy, your margins are going backwards. And as Kerr says, that's not the right way to be promoting yourself into the business.
No, it isn't. And she's quite right. But no, this is where you consider that sometimes the marketing budget of a top FMCG brand is 8-10% of revenues. You know, that's a lot of money. There's a major producer in the Western Cape where I was running a workshop 2 months ago, and when I mentioned that figure, they just sort of dissolved in laughter and said, well, we're less than half of that. But you know, this is where you can turn it on and off like a tap to a degree, but you've got to watch what your competitors are doing. You know, this is the time of year that the deodorant guys start advertising. One wonder why. But you know, this is where they're all watching either to see where they're advertising and the channels to market they're using.
Yeah, and the one thing we are seeing is consumers being a lot savvier. And to your point, Kerith, about where they're shopping and when in terms of that promotional cycle. I speak to some friends who will tell you exactly when a particular coffee brand is going on special at a particular retailer. And it also speaks to perhaps partnerships between the brands and the retailers that Jeremy said are brands in and of themselves as well. Well, anyway, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for on the panel tonight. Kerith Botha, MD of Nielsen South Africa, and Jeremy Sampson, MD of Brand Finance Africa, and the brand father with his first half of a long week here on Classic Business. That's a wrap from the team tonight. Sound engineers Mataba Taba Radebe and Mwanda Lorbe bid you farewell. Thank you to producer Andres Mishlangu. Sylvia A is up next in the Jazz Lounge in Cape Town at Gauteng. Carolyn Stain is up next with the smoothest classics on Winding Down. Good night.